I wonder if we can talk a little bit about water bottling.
Right.
I know so many people who are health conscious and as well another anthropocentric way, who want to drink water out of bottles. And people at this university, I don't go to it, but I hear stories of people being dropped off by their parents and residents with the cases and cases of water bottles, and it's just this massive problem. And maybe with a bit of local focus to Guelph, we can talk about Nestle, who owns Aberfoyle Springs. I looked up on the Environmental Registry of Ontario last week, and they have a permit to extract 3.6 million liters of water a day, or 2,500 liters every single minute, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And it's too big a number to even comprehend. So I was wondering, can you talk a bit about how common that volume is of extraction and what effect this is having on the ground, on the aquifer?
Bunch of issues there.
There's a lot of, I know there's a lot. Maybe we can talk with EBR later as well, after this.
Yeah, I think the one of all is, the one you mentioned, which is really, really important, which is pumping these aquifers dry and the threat of taking all this water out of the aquifers, because obviously the aquifers then are not going to discharge back into the rivers, which are going to feed, communities downstream with their water, the wildlife ecosystem, wetlands, et cetera, and feed back into the Great Lakes. And if you're going to allow that sort of extraction for bottled water or, here in Toronto, the big pipe to put big sewage pipes 150 meters deep, or many of these aggregate pits that we see everywhere, you see them around Guelph as well, that are, just pumping, hundreds of millions of liters of water out of the ground and then discharging them into streams that can't hold the water, or they're too cold, the wrong temperature, et cetera. These are real problems. We've got laws in Ontario that are supposed to protect us against these things, but the processes around them are so weak, and the lobbyists are so strong, and the government is under such pressure to approve these permits by industry without having an opportunity to get the public really meaningfully involved to help, stop them or make sure that they're only done in the appropriate way. But although the laws are good, the actual permits are being issued they're just like giving them out. And it's a real problem. And for places like Guelph, it's a real, real concern because you guys really do sit on one of the great aquifers in Ontario. Bottled water, it's a different issue. You're right, because it's another concern, because you put it in the bottle and you ship it around, you create a market for people to, all those plastic bottles are everywhere, and we're all drinking out of them, and I guess we're doing it because we're concerned about what's coming out of the tap, which is another issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, from an efficiency point of view, from an environmental point of view, clearly this is an inefficient system. Suzuki, I like when David Suzuki talks about he drinks tap water, he always says because he's concerned about impotence coming from the chemicals out of the bottled water. I don't know if that's true, but that's another thing to consider. One thing I do want to mention for those who are concerned about, pumping groundwater and putting them in for bottling water, there is a concern with respect to pumping the groundwater, but it's minimal. It's so small when compared to what the aggregate industry is doing and the amount that they're pumping out, or to, the amount that other industry is pumping out just, for construction and land use. It's just unbelievable the amount of water they're just wastefully pulling out of our aquifers and discharging into our creeks and streams and destroying them because there's too much water, the wrong temperature, et cetera. And so it's a real huge problem. Again, it requires public to go to their local Ministry of Environment, Ministry of Natural Resources, attend these hearings, be very vocal, ask what the rules are, make sure they're being enforced, make sure there's the science to justify what the lobbyists and these slippery soap salesmen are saying, and not being held accountable through some sort of process, through cross-examination or whatever, or independent decision-making. It's just, it's unbelievable what goes for evidence at these hearings. And, if we're not careful, if we're not using our democratic processes to ensure that what these permits are allowing are not going to come back and hurt us, then we're just fools. We have the processes in place, and we have the knowledge, and we know how to hold people accountable and make sure the truth is the truth. And to not do that when we're allowing people to pump out of our groundwater, or pump our groundwater out, is just foolish. And You know, I again, our group certainly pushes those democratic processes and tries to hold these guys accountable and make them, you know, have to prove their case as much as, you know, not just leave it to lobbyists and ads in the newspaper. I mean, I'll just give you, it's not a groundwater issue, but it just disgusts me, and that's those ads that we see about nuclear power and about Canadians being unclear and that it's a clean industry. You know, this is an industry that refuses to be cross-examined, refuses to undergo due process, refuses to have to prove what it's saying in a public forum where it can be held accountable. It's just taken to the airwaves and throws out newspaper, or, you know, throws out ads during Blue Jay games and takes out ads in the paper and uses taxpayers' money. And it's just, you know, it's just unbelievable. It just makes me sick. And I think a lot of our permitting for groundwater is the same, where the industry just says, there's going to be no problem. Don't worry about it. It's going to be good for everybody. And, you know, they don't ever have to really be scrutinized in a public forum. And I think that's the problem. We've got the democratic processes in place, and we have to use them. And we shouldn't be relying on, you know, slippery soap salesman slogans to decide who gets what water and who gets to build nuclear plants.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a bit about these democratic processes? And I know, like, because it's true, we need to be out there. And I know a lot of people have such little faith in government and laws and whatnot, that they just begin to see that as a waste of time, or it won't make a difference or whatever, kind of like voting. But I wonder if you can talk a bit about what processes are open, what are there for us to use, and as well as your thoughts on whether that's an uphill battle or not, or like what the long picture of that is, kind of.
Yeah, I'm not cynical about our processes, and I think that came out what I was saying before. I don't believe that our environmental assessment hearings and our public hearings, where we have someone independent and we use evidence, I don't believe that those processes don't work. I believe they do work, and that's based on my experience. My experience has been time and time again, when people have to, you know, have to justify or prove their case in some sort of quasi-judicial process, you know, 90% of the slogans and the propaganda, it disappears very quickly, and we cut right to the chase very quickly. And even if a project is approved, the terms and conditions put on that project make the project, you know, hundreds of times better than it was without that process in place. I believe industry has been a major reason why the public believes that these processes don't work. I believe they've gone around and said they're inefficient, they're costly, there's just a bunch of slippery lawyers out there, you know, and they've put in people's minds somehow this cynical attitude that our processes don't work. And, you know, 10 years ago, the province of Ontario, for any major work, whether it was a landfill, a nuclear plant, a coal plant, aquifer, you know, permits to take water, they were all required to undergo environmental assessments, and hearings were popping up all over the province. Now, I don't think there's been a hearing in Ontario in 3 or 4 years. Now it's self-assessments, and they're voluntary terms and conditions put in place, and this is all supposedly efficient, more effective, less expensive, and the reality is what it is just stupid. It's just an absolute and positively foolish thing for us to do, to get rid of our democratic processes that aren't perfect, you know, where, in terms of the appointments, it's not always fair. There are prejudices among the people who make these decisions, but they're public. Anybody can show up. They have to take an oath before they give their evidence, and they can be cross-examined. And there used to be funds made available for communities to participate. And there are opportunities to put alternative viewpoints forward. And when decisions were made, they had to be written. And they had to be written within a certain amount of time. And they went on a file so others could look at those decisions and use them for their community's work. And, you know, federally and provincially in this country, whatever happened in the last 5 to 8 years, you know, and who drove it, I think the lobbyists have driven it. And now everything's done through lobbying. You register on the lobby register provincially or federally, and basically you can go and meet politicians, and you don't have to testify under oath, you don't have to file your evidence, you don't have to be, you don't have to do it in an open forum and be scrutinized as to what you're saying. You can now just go into a politician's office and say, hey, buddy, This is good for the community. We're going to do a bunch of ads. We're going to push it. I'd say you better come on board now because the public's going to buy into this, and if you want to get elected, you should be buying into it too. I think that's an outrageous way to do these major public undertakings and public works jobs, whether they have to do with utilities or electricity or water. It's just foolish, and so the democratic processes are still there. The Environmental Assessment Act is still on the books. It's just now it's no longer mandatory. It's the discretion of the ministry and the minister as to whether or not a project should have to undergo those hearings. And my experience, and I've been involved in many, many hearings, was that those hearings were essential to improving the decision-making process or actually agreeing to go ahead with something. I mean, imagine 10 years ago when the demand supply plan hearing in Ontario, where the nuclear power plants, the building of the new ones, had to undergo a hearing. And after a year and a half, Ontario Hydro withdrew the whole bloody project because it looked so terrible. And they were going to spend $60 billion on new plants then. Well, today they're saying that the new plants they want to build, well, the reason why we should build them is because they're new. The old ones were bad, they admit. The new ones, they're going to be better. But we don't need a hearing. Well, imagine if we did that 10 years ago and we built those old clunkers. We'd be left with, tens of billions of dollars of more debt. And the only thing that prevented that from happening was having the hearings and forcing the industry to have to explain the economics and the benefits of their industry. And when they couldn't, they withdrew the application. They didn't even give Justice Saunders or Grace Patterson or George Connell, who were the panel on the Ontario Demand Supply Plan here, and they didn't even give them the chance to write a decision because they knew it was going to be so scathing that they withdrew the entire application. That's just one example. I can give you many examples, of the landfill hearing in Kingston that I did, and I can give you examples of where hearings have improved the actual project. They've said that you can go again, but only subject to these terms and conditions. And, that's what the democratic process is. Nobody would suggest that, we should be throwing people in jail without giving them their day in court and allowing them to have counsel. We need to have even legal aid counsel, and we need to make it public so anybody can go and listen, and there have to be decisions. No one says our courts are perfect, but I don't see many people protesting outside the penitentiaries in this country, and I don't see anybody, other than maybe Harper, and we heard at least recently he's pushing for these minimum standards and sentencing provisions, which is sort of frightening to me. But for the most part, no one's suggesting that we should replace the courts with lobbying and a more efficient, effective process where governments and people who don't like other people get together and decide how long they should go to jail or whether they're guilty or innocent. And the environment's the same thing. It deserves the same golden standard for decision-making. It deserves scrutiny. It deserves public transparency, and it deserves the best we have in terms of getting at the truth, which is allowing people to ask questions of each other and to have them determined, by an independent decision maker. That's the democratic process. That's what we use when we're making important decisions about people's futures and where there are winners and losers, and to render environmental decisions to, basically to commercials and editorials in the newspaper, in my estimation, is just like really stupid and really foolish.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about what, the people out there who would like to take part in this or just enraged about things going on in their communities, can you talk a bit about what opportunities are available, like the process these things go through and what tools are available to people?
Yeah, we do a workshop in Toronto, where we teach law students the different tools and processes that are available, and it's a year-long sort of work. It's called the Clean Water Workshop, and we also supplement it with waterkeeper.ca. There's a free weekly newsletter we put out, and, if you wanted to really know what's going on, you should follow that newsletter every week, and maybe even if you're in Toronto on Tuesday nights, drop into our workshop or call us and see if you can get involved in our workshop. But if it's just, you're saying, just on a, what you can do right now, it's really important that you understand the names of your rivers and your community. It's important that you understand where your beaches are. It's important that you understand what wildlife and what vulnerable parts of the environment are in need of help in your community. It's important to understand the battles that are going on in your community. Ontario Municipal Board hearings, they're public. When developers and land use people are trying to, get approval to take over wetlands, fill in wetlands, fill in lake. You know, it's important that our campus communities, our environmental groups on our campus send representatives to these hearings, to keep to follow them, to ask for proper hearings when they're needed. I mean, the government, the Ministry of Environment and Ministry of Natural Resources have the ability to order more scrutiny into processes, and I think our local campus and our university environmental group should know that. They should know that they need to get involved and take part in these processes, because if they don't, even though it takes a lot of work and a lot of time, if they don't, the approvals are just going to go on and on and on. And I think it would be great if the universities, again, the science, the people in the science and hydrogeology and hydrology and biology, also worked with the students in political and social and arts programs, you know, to really inform them and have decent interventions in these hearings. And that really does work. It's amazing if you can get, you know, if you can call their bluff in many of these cases with people who know what they're talking about, how we can win, and many of the government officials will side with us in a public process when we act in a, you know, a fairly sophisticated manner. And that's, Waterkeepers are really all about that. We try to participate in these democratic processes, and we elbow our way in there, and we try and use real lawyers and real science and real evidence, and we demand a certain accounting, and we demand a certain level of process before the decisions are made, and we've been very successful. And you don't get always on the front page, and you don't get all the press all the time, but it's amazing what you can do behind the scenes for local communities and for people. And you know, it's one wetland at a time, and it's one river at a time. But if we could get the campuses and the universities and the students, you know, really working and using these processes and taking advantage of the opportunities that are given to them, I think we could have we could really start a movement here, not only in Ontario but right across Canada, that would create higher standards and more meaningful processes and greater protection for our environmental resources. That's what I would suggest. I know that's it's not. You can also send $20 to your favorite environmental group, but it's always better to get informed and get active and really participate in a mature fashion, I believe, and really cherish the processes that are provided to us and make them work. That's what we try and do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like also how you mentioned earlier that a precursor to even caring would be to spend time outside with these watersheds, with these rivers, and get to know on a personal basis and cultivate a relationship with the land we live on. I think that's because people who stay inside all the time and don't really know what beauty is around them aren't going to care that much when it gets paved over.
Exactly. And, you know, I always say, just learn the names of your rivers and your beaches, because even that, you know, you only have to memorize about 10 things. But when you memorize the names, then you're going to end up going there, and you're going to end up participating, and you're just going to end up, you know, creating your own story in your community with your environment as part of that story. And it's really important. I say to all the kids in Toronto, one thing they should do is learn the names of the 10 beaches in Toronto. What a great thing. And the politicians in the audience sit there, and some of them have been counselors for 20 years, and they can't even name the 3 beaches in their ward, or they wouldn't know which beach is the cleanest one or, you know, the worst one. They're starting to now, because we're all around the place talking about it. But, it is tragic, you know, and I don't know in Guelph. I know there's a few conservation areas where you have different beaches and places you can swim, and I used to swim up at the Elora Quarry a lot. And I know, I don't know what the other names are, but I know you have the Speed River in town.
Yeah.
And Kitchener-Waterloo is the Grand.
Yeah.
You lived in Kitchener-Waterloo, you hardly even knew there was a river, except when you came off the 401, you went over one. But, yeah, it's really important to give names to these places and get to know them and build a relationship, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. I just want to remind my listeners that this is Mark Mattson, an environmental lawyer with Waterkeepers, and your website is Waterkeeper or waterkeepers.ca?
Just waterkeeper.ca.
Okay.
Waterkeepers.ca is the national website, and it gives you the different, it'll bring you to the different 10 different groups across Canada.
I'd like to ask you a couple more questions.
Yep.
What about tap water? A lot of people are freaked out about tap water, and of course that brings up the urge to buy bottled water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I hear all kinds of things. I hear that there's, you know, hundreds of carcinogens in tap water, and I hear there's this and that, and I hear that there'll be unhealthy concentrations of lead in Toronto's tap water until you run the tap water for 5 minutes at least, and I hear all kinds of stuff. And I wonder if you can share with us some truth about what's going on with the tap water today, what kind of contamination it's at right now, and what people can do to feel safe in some way.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's a big question, you know. There's a lot of different risks and public health issues, even when you mention lead, you know. That's not the problem with the water from the lake mm-hmm. or from the groundwater. That's problems with, you know, the plumbing in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when you go to any other home or you go to any other building, you know, you don't know what their plumbing was like. They still have lead pipes, so they've changed them to copper. And then, of course, there's the issue of how, our utilities treat our water. Many people don't like the fluorine going into the water. I know in Toronto, I think they use something like 43 chemicals to make our water drinkable. What are the impacts of those chemicals? And then, as I mentioned earlier, in Kitchener-Waterloo, there's a particular concern, which is TCE, which is left over from, you know, some of the earliest tire factories in the world. And these huge waste sites that are now just buried in the middle of the city, and the extent that they're getting into the groundwater is a concern. So there's all different factors. I mean, there's so many different things to consider.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you go buy bottled water, do you really know, if the factors going into that water are any better than the ones going into the water coming out of your tap? I don't think you do. I think, you know, it's an act of faith no matter how you look at it. But I personally do have confidence in for the most part, in the provision of public water. That's just my own decision. Again, it may be an act of civil disobedience, but so be it. I do recognize that going forward, that our communities and the strength of our communities depend so much on the provision of clean public water I really do want to make sure that if it's not good today, then it better be better and good tomorrow. And so I'm going to work towards ensuring that our tap water is clean more than I'm going to worry about, where I get my water from a bottle or not. I think that's for me anyways, and I mean, I'm a little older now, but that's a healthy decision for me mentally to take.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives me a goal. I really do want to work towards ensuring that our tap water is clean and that our water resources are clean so we can drink and not have to treat them with so many chemicals. And that's my goal. And that's really where I'm heading. And mm-hmm. that's what waterkeepers really are all about. The personal decision as to whether or not you want to drink that water or you want to choose some other source, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really is personal, and I think many factors are involved in that decision.
Can you tell me about...
I'm not trying to skirt the question. It's mm-hmm. just it's a difficult one because there's so many things that go into your tap water versus the bottled water issue, and I think you really do need to understand it yourself. But at the end of the day, I don't think there's anybody who disagrees with me that we do need to work towards protecting and ensuring that we have a safe, accessible supply of water for our entire communities, and that's essential for the future and growth, economic, social, and environmental health of our communities.
Yeah. Can you talk a bit about what some of the common chemicals are used to treat tap water?
Well, just, the most famous one always is fluorine and just what they put in for protection of our teeth. I don't really know much about the other chemicals. I mean, mm-hmm. I read iMagazine in Toronto, and they list them every year, and you can go to the website of any public utility, and they have to tell you what they're putting in the water and the different different levels, whether there's arsenic in there. As I say, in Port Elgin, some of the highest levels of tritium in public water comes out of the Port Elgin drinking water, and that's as a result of the Bruce nuclear plant, which is just to the south of it. Every community on Lake Ontario has tritium in their drinking water as a result of those two nuclear reactors, so they're supposedly at safe levels, according to the industry. Other things that they have to treat water with, though, are, they've got to chlorine. We know they have to treat it for to kill E. coli and kill the organic matter, and then there's other treatments they do with softening it and protecting it, so that when it goes through all the pipes and gets to your tap, it's still safe to drink. And then there's the fluorine, which is there to help protect your teeth. You know, some communities have hard water, some have soft, so they have to treat it with different things to make sure that it gets through the entire system. So it's always different. It's not my expertise, but the information certainly is available, and I know that, you know, at least here in Ontario, they force the utilities to publish that information, put it on its website, so anyone can go get the information, assess it for themselves. I should also note that it's not that difficult to look up the standards in Ontario for, you know, drinking water quality guidelines,
mm-hmm.
and that's where they look at, you know, 80 or 90 different contaminants, and they let you know at what level they feel the water is safe to drink. And those are very easy to find on provincial government websites. They also have standards which are called provincial water quality guidelines, which provide safety levels for all kinds of different contaminants, and that would be for the aquatic habitat. So what's safe for fish and the benthic community, and what's safe for fish food and wildlife. So it's, you know, when we hear arsenic and we'll wonder what's safe about arsenic, it's not that difficult. It's just go on the computer, and you could find out within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then the water company will provide their own sampling on a day-to-day basis, and they put that on their website, and you can see for yourself their levels that you're drinking versus the ones that are safe. It's not a hard thing to do. You don't need to hire someone to do that. You can do that yourself, and it's fairly simple.
Right on. I got a few more minutes left, and I wonder if we can just, if you have any closing words. Like, we've talked about a whole bunch of issues, from the Great Lakes to bottled water to tap water and all kinds of stuff in between. Do you have anything left you would like to say to finish off on?
Anything else I say? I want
to
say,
wrap things up. Perhaps some motivating words of some kind are always nice after hearing about the collapse of the Great Lakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I think we've touched on really the important things, which is to get out there and start enjoying the Great Lakes and believe what you see and not what you hear. Go to your water body, and I'm sure what you're going to see is a big sign that's going to say "Don't swim." And you know, I think that should be a red light in everyone's minds. I think we've got to be very concerned about the way we're closing off our access to and our relationship to our water. Our waters, and if that completes the cycle, then we're going to be in a real difficult position, not only politically, but environmentally. I think it's really important that we all get out there and start to appreciate that, which, you know, is so central to our communities. Why our communities are where they are. So many of them are maritime communities, or they're set up on these rivers because of the access to clean and clean water and, you know, and wildlife. And I think we need to understand that and begin to enjoy it and start fighting for it again. One thing I do say on the Great Lakes, it's not enough any longer just to protect and preserve what we have left, because we've lost so much. We have to go out there and start winning back what we've lost. So we're in a little different position than other people. There's no more room for consensus. There's no more, room for deal making. We can't give up a little bit to protect something any longer. We have to win at all costs. We have to win back what we've lost to make these rivers, you know, sing again and be whole. And that's really, if I have to leave your listeners with anything, and that's what it's all about, to go back and win back your right to fish, swim, and drink the Great Lakes, and win back your right to have these Great Lakes live and prosper. And if we can do that, certainly not only can we enjoy them in our lifetime, but we'll be able to say that we left it for the future as well.